Who knows what Christmas is all about?
Well, that's one heck of a question, isn't it? Like, does anybody actually know what Christmas is all about? That's been like the question since 1965. That's when that thing came out. Some of you just realize you're a lot younger than you thought you were. But every year, it's been like 56 years, give or take, since that came out. Right, and every year, that's one of those stereotypical things about Christmas, like the Charlie Brown Christmas special. And that always has that emotional climax in. Does anybody actually know, like, the real, like, purpose and meaning that we actually do this thing? Which is a phenomenal question to ask today, because Christmas was yesterday. And so it's still fresh. It's still fresh in our minds. See, because depending on how the last month has gone for you, right, whatever, like, you were hoping for either happened or didn't yesterday, right? Because we have all these Hallmark movies. We have all of our expectations. We all have our Christmas shopping that was hopefully done more than 2 days ago, right? And those kind of things that you were prepared for to be able to do. Like, everything was built into that moment that came yesterday. And so if what your hopes were resting on was something good, you have that relief and excitement. It's like, ah, Christmas. But if it was something that you're like maybe a little spotty on, you can't got to yesterday, and it was like, oh, that didn't feel superb. But now's a great time to be asking this question so that we don't miss a moment or lose like a potential lesson that we can learn from it. And so that's just the question we're going to be locking in on today of, okay, so what was that Christmas thing all about? I will give you a heads up. We're going to do things differently this morning. I'm very aware that I have a very like normal way that I go about preaching sermons, and it's that, okay, we like read a Bible story, we learn more about that Bible story, and then we apply it, and then we go home. We're going to do the sermon in reverse. So we're going to start with all the things that Christmas is not about. We're going to spend some quality time on that, and then we will get to the Bible and actually be able to kind of reset on that. I promise you, we will read the Bible. Okay? I'm with you. You're with me. We're a team. We'll figure this out. We'll get through this together. But because of how many expectations we put on Christmas and how much we behave like it might be about some different things, what we actually have to do is kind of peel off layers of that onion so that eventually we get to the core of what it's about, but we actually have to take the energy and time to actually remove some of those false layers or like maybe misplaced ones that kind of seem like they're the point. Make sense? Are you with me? Are you awake? Nice. We are getting there. We are getting there. We gave you an extra hour to sleep today to get that like Christmas eggnog hangover done or whatever's going on so we can be together. All right? Wow. We went from everybody to one guy. But you know, Jarrett, this is why we're friends. We're right here. All right. So we're going to start unpacking layers of the onion. Okay. First thing that Christmas is not about. Presents. Okay. Right, like, I know that sometimes, like, you get, like, something as a gift, you're like, yay, oh my goodness, where did you buy this? I love it. Did you find it on Etsy? I love it. Right, but some of you gave a gift yesterday, and someone opened it, like, oh my goodness, where's the gift receipt? Like, some of you will have a bunch of stuff in the car right now, because after service, you're going to head on down to the Amazon return spot to maybe give away a gift that you didn't actually want, but that someone bought you and you pretended you liked, right? Thank goodness that that is not what Christmas is about, but we live in America, and we have this little cultural thing that we do, which is we associate our happiness with the things we can buy ourselves or other people. Right, whatever money can buy, that's the point. That's what we're going for. That's what the hustle of all of life is about anyway. And then eventually we retire and lay on a beach somewhere, maybe. We're in Michigan, so we all go to Florida, apparently. Like, that's the Michigan dream, right? Make enough money to move to Florida. But did you know that there's actually a cap on how much happiness money can buy you? Like, so psychologically, we've actually researched it. Did you know that if your salary, wages, whatever you make in a given year is over $70,000, it no longer affects your mood? Yep. So that's basically enough to take care of your needs, like, okay, shelter, food, yes, internet, Netflix, a few other things, get a couple of wants in there, like a nice vacation every year. But then after that, any more money that you make doesn't actually affect your mood. Now, the study's a little bit older, so if we adjust for inflation, it's only about like 80 grand. Some of y'all work at Whirlpool or in different like professions where that's entry-level money. Yeah, after entry-level, your happiness isn't going to go up just because of your salary. Some of us who have never made that much money are like, I would love that if that were entry-level. But there's actually a cap on what money can do for you, which also means there's a cap on what the things you can buy with money can do for you. Thank goodness Christmas is not centered on the quality of the gifts that you can buy other people or receive from other people. Second thing that Christmas is not about, it's a good thing, but it's not the center of the point, time with family and friends. First of all, if you have a family, spend time with them. If you have friends, spend time with them. Those like friends that you've like over time adopted to consider as family, right? Spend time with them. It's a very, very good thing, but it's also not the key point of Christmas. Some of y'all are more annoyed today because you had to hang out with that family yesterday. It happens. Right? And sometimes it's just a matter of like you actually enjoy your family, but you like overbook yourself. You know that where you're like, you don't want to disappoint anybody. Like you want to make everybody happy, but you like overdid it a little bit. And so you tried to do everybody's Christmas thing, right? So I remember when Abby and I, my beautiful, beautiful wife, Abby, when we first got married, the first Christmas that we weren't actually in state for. So we'd come back from Indiana because I was in college at the time. And we were like, okay, we've only got a week in Michigan. So we're going to do it all. And so we started. We did family Christmas with my mom. And I'm one of those wonderful people that has a blended family, so you get extra Christmases, right? So we did Christmas with my mom one day. And then the next day, we did Christmas with my dad. And there was like an extended like family Christmas the next day. And it's like, oh, okay, cool. Yeah, we'll do that one. And then we drove the other hour to go see Abby's family the next day. And we did Christmas with them. And then they have an extended family Christmas. And so we did that with them. And then the next day after that, we did the extended family Christmas where you don't exchange gifts, but you all just like drink punch and hang out and high five, right? We did that Christmas. Christmas party, and then we thought the brilliant move would be to end all of that travel and business and workings and everything else by going to see some friends and doing some friends' Christmas on that last evening that we would be in Michigan. And our entire drive there from Kalamazoo to Grand Junction, which is where the friends were, and Kalamazoo is where Abby's family lives, that entire hour there, we weren't per se fighting, but we were not happy. Like, it's one of those, like, you ever had the argument where you just, like, exchange grunts where you're like, and, like, you don't know why that tension's building, right? It's just starting to, like, go toward the top, and you're like, we're doing more things. And so we get to the place, and we have a system where Abby packs and unpacks, and I'm the pack mule that carries everything. And so Abby saunters her way on into the house. She's like, hey, friends. She sits down. They're like, oh, it's so good to see you. And then in comes Chad with, like, all the bags. And I'm just like, huh? And there's, like, one more bag because we've been out there for, you know, a week away from home. And so I grab the last bag. And they're all sitting there looking at me like, what is wrong with you? I don't think Chad's happy. You throw the last bag down. I plop down. They're like, Do we need some counseling? How are you? You okay? You ever like walk into a room and everyone's head kind of tilts with that like, are you okay? Yeah, they gave me one of those. And that's at that moment you realize that you might be the problem, right? But we had just overdid it. You can overdo it with good things. So our philosophy now is that rather than only disappointing one person, we disappoint everybody. And so Christmas Day, we just hang out with ourselves. And then we do different family things around that. But also, time with family and friends. Please take that time. Spend that time. Enjoy the fact that you have people in your life that care about you and that you get to care about. Also, not the actual point of Christmas. Another one that's not the meaning of Christmas, snow. First of all, God decided to decorate yesterday with rain. Christmas still happened. Yay. Fourth thing that Christmas is not about, just me skipping along. That's the funny. You never know it's going to drill down on the funny bone, by the way. Apparently, me just skipping right along was the thing. All right, so fourth thing Christmas is not about is just traditions. Like, we got songs, eggnog, Santa, lights and trees and all the other stuff. Like, those, again, are good things. They're enjoyable things and they're wonderful things. But they're not necessarily the point. They help us, like, kind of shape around it. But also, I got this weird thing. Like, I've got a little bit of a beef with Christmas music. I can sense that you're about to turn on me. Please don't. There's like, two kinds of Christmas music, okay? There's the stuff about Jesus. Love that. That's great. We can work with that. Just 24 and 25th of December, no other day of the year. But those songs, like, can work with that. Like, O Come, Emmanuel is one of the most theologically rich songs ever, especially, like, locking in with that actual, like, moment leading into the first, like, Christmas when Jesus was actually born. Like, ooh, that's good, right? I'm on board with that. But then there's some other songs, like Chestnuts Roasting on an Open Fire. I don't know how many of y'all have done that. Also, I can barely picture what a chestnut is. And it doesn't really make a lot of sense to me. And there's like those weird, like, tradition-y songs, like, that's weird. Also, can we talk about Santa Claus briefly? Here's what we tell children to get them to behave. All right. Junia, there's an old guy somewhere. You've never met him. You'll never see him. It's fine. He stares at you when you're awake and when you're asleep. Also, he's judging you a lot. And if you do a good job, which is kind of a flexible point and we're not really 100% sure on, he'll bring you coal or a gift. Can we honestly say that that's weird? Yeah. Okay, we're on board with the fact that that's a little bizarre that we tell children that there's some stranger staring at them 24/7. But also, like, the original Saint Nick, great guy. So Santa Claus was based on St. Nicholas, who was the Bishop of Myra. It's a place in Turkey a long time ago. Super generous dude. But by the way, do you know the story of, like, the real St. Nick, by the way? No? Well, let me tell you. This is amazing. So, by the way, this is church history. This is the history of us with some people that are very important. So Nicholas was the Bishop of Myra, which is a place in, like, southwestern-ish Turkey, modern day. And it was lived in about the 300s AD. And one of the places that he went was this place called Nicaea, because he was an important guy. Leading up to that, he was a super generous dude, helped, like, widows and orphans, also helped kings and armies, like, everybody. Super generous, which is why we, like, give gifts around anything to do with this guy, because he was a generous dude. Also had a bit of a temper. So, I know, it's going to get better. So he went to this place called Nicaea because after Christianity stopped being an oppressed religion, we had to get together to figure out how we were going to teach other people who Jesus is. Hence, Council of Nicaea. You can read about it. It's a wonderful, important thing. But they got all the bishops and teachers and everyone they could find together that actually was pretty good about teaching this Jesus thing. And they got them all together. It was about 300 or so of them. And they got them together. Okay, how are we going to teach who Jesus is? What do we, like, agree is his nature? Like, is he God? Is he human? He's both, but, like, how does that work? Like, all those kind of things. And what they did was they had, like, everyone would just sit on the one side, and then whoever was speaking would get their turn at front, and they would all just listen because they're bishops. They're reserved people. Everything was going swimmingly right up until this guy named Arius got his turn on the floor. Now, Arius is what we call a heretic. Because his whole teaching on Jesus was that, like, Jesus turns out not God, but, like, he was super cool, like, God's first and greatest creature, but not the creator, and then, like, other heretical things like that. And so, by the way, we believe Jesus is God. That's, like, core tenet of Christianity. Okay, you with me? Does that make sense? Awesome. So Arius is doing his whole heresy thing over there, and Nick, Saint Nick, jolly old Saint Nick, is just sitting there respectfully for a hot minute, just letting this go on. But he loved his Jesus. And he was not about to have too much more of that. But Arius went on and on and on. And the story goes that Nick, having heard too much of this guy, decided, knocked him out. Boom. That's the original Saint Nick. He spent some time in prison for that. So to celebrate Christmas, we're going to host overflow cage fights. If anybody can beat Pastor Elijah, you win. It won't work. But also, What an attachment to Jesus, by the way, that you actually stand up for him in that way. Probably should be a little less violent, right? Love your enemies. That'd be important. But also, like, the traditions that gave rise. Thankfully, we attached to the more positive things about him. The fact that he was a generous dude, looked out for other people, gave a lot of gifts, looked out for the high and the low, and everyone in between, and people that you would normally forget about. Generosity was a great, great thing. It's awesome. But Santa Claus, not the point of Christmas. Last one that's not the point of Christmas, and then we'll get to the Bible and we'll get to reread with some fresh ears. Nostalgia, not the point of Christmas. Like, nostalgia is that thing where it's like, I just want it to feel like it did when I was a kid. That, like, emotional, like, it's not an emotional high, it's like one of those, like, really cool feelings where you're like, everything feels so good in the world. You know? And don't get me wrong, like, now that I have a family, that feeling is much more like present. Now, normally, so there's a reason I picked being on the Grinch movie at the beginning of this series, because that's typically how I feel about most things. Pray for me. But, like, we took Junia and the girls, like, we got them in the stroller, and we pushed them through the light up the bluffs, like, with all those arches and the cool lights and stuff. And, like, I'm not going to lie to y'all, it's a great thing when, you know, like, we're going through those, like, arches, and Junia's like, it's like, yes, it does look great. And then, like, on the inside, it's like those warm fuzzies where it's like, yay, the world is good. Woo! But also, nostalgia is a little bit too me-centered to be the actual reason that we go through this whole Christmas season. Again, not a bad thing. It's a good thing. If you have moments in your life where it's like, oh, the world is good, cherish those. But what are we left with when we, like, if we remove the good feels, the nostalgia, the traditions, the Santa Claus, tell some funny stories about the actual Saint Nick, and then we remove the time with family and friends and the presents and the snow, and we remove absolutely all of that. What are we left with? Jesus. Yes, if you're ever confused in church, just blurt out Jesus, we'll be okay. Yes. Like, so when we've removed all the different layers, when we've actually, like, peeled down to the core of what we have, now's a great time to reread a very familiar story to you and just let it sink in through your ears and through your conscience and let it really just lock in today. So you don't got to turn there, it'll be on the screen for you, but just want to read that really familiar spot in Luke chapter 2 to you again. In those days, Caesar Augustus issued a decree that a census should be taken of the entire Roman world. This was the first census that took place while Quirinius was governor of Syria. And everyone went to their town to register. So Joseph also went up to the town of Nazareth in Galilee, to Judea, to Bethlehem, the town of David, because he belonged to the house and line of David. He went there to register with Mary, who was pledged to be married to him and was expecting a child. While they were there, the time came for the baby to be born, and she gave birth to her firstborn, a son. She wrapped him in clothes and placed him in a manger because there was no guest room available for them. You've probably heard that story hundreds of times if you grew up around the church. But, like, do you realize the earth-shattering reality that just, like, happened? God, in all of the, like, what we mean, when we say the word God, like, all-present, all-powerful, all-knowing, good, has, like, the power to, like, smite and also the power to, like, create everything, like, heavens and skies and give us, like, knowledge how to build square buildings and also how to, like, lay grass out in the lawn and actually, like, water and fertilize it and, like, the God that actually gave us creativity and energy and the ability to work and to make money and also the, like, idea of, like, how to actually build a society. Like, the God of the world gave us the wisdom and knowledge of how to do that. Like, God, and all that it means when we say the word God, became a baby. Right, that name Emmanuel, like God with us, like, that's the thing. Like, Christmas, at its core, is about Jesus, but even more specifically, Christmas is a time to reflect on when God became human. There's a really old theological exercise that I can honestly not remember who did it first, so generically, thank you whoever came up with it. But it's this saying that in Jesus, God became human without ceasing to be God. Like, the all-powerful became limited while still somehow being God. The invincible, undefeatable, like, top of the pile, hierarchy always over top of that God, became vulnerable. Perfect power became weak. Like, the God of the universe got fragile and was still somehow God. Like, we could spend hours and hours and hours trying to unpack all of that, which I encourage you. You have the rest of the day. Go ahead. It would be worth the time. But, like, above all of that, as our minds are, like, barely handling the idea of, like, God and human in, like, two natures, one person, like, all of those things, the fact that this, like, in Jesus, somehow God and humanity are together, like, as we're trying to, like, unpack that, there's a really, really simple application for us. Like, the what do we do with this? Why on earth does that matter? Really basic application. Just take Jesus home with you. That's it. Right? Like, Mary literally had to do that because she gave birth to a baby. And, like, y'all know, if you've had kids, like, when you leave the hospital, like, oh, this has come home with me. Right? I don't know why all the parents just laughed right there. Yeah, it's an earth-shattering reality. Yeah, I feel the same way. But, like, we can take Jesus home with us. Like, right, because God crossed the incredible gap between heaven and earth, we can make the leap from Sunday to Monday. Okay. Right? So just take Jesus home with you. Like, what if Jesus's, like, Emmanuel, God with us moment was in your shoes? What would he do with that? If Jesus had the same job that you do, what would he do with that? If Jesus was, you know, with you, because he is, how would he go about dealing with life? So, for example, when you're going to the Amazon return spot, it's at Kohl's here in town, to get rid of gifts that you really did not want, that someone else bought you, how would Jesus wait in line? Right? Or when you got to the front, because everyone else has been angry at the customer service worker because it took too long to get rid of stuff they didn't want, like, how would Jesus, like, interact with that customer service worker? Would you be the bright spot in that day? Or let's say you're actually checking out, because a lot of people do their grocery shopping on Sundays. Let's say you're in the checkout line, and you're kind of, like, unpacking that, but, like, all of us play the same game. When we go to the checkout lines, we're like, which one's shortest? Which one's shortest? And, like, we send, like, a kid, or, like, if you got someone else with you, like, you go in that line, I'll go in this one, and, like, we'll figure out which one's shorter, and then you, like, hop over there. Like, what if you just picked a line, stuck in it, and just pleasantly went about your day? Right? Maybe chat up the people in the front behind you, but then also when you get to the cashier, they have to wear a name tag with their actual name on it, so use their name and actually be, like, kind to them and, like, be like, hey, man, how you doing? It's good to see you. But, like, that family time, right? Family time, which is not the point of Christmas, but also is something really, really valuable that you get. Do you pass the garage door test? As in, when everyone else can hear you coming home because the garage door goes up and it's like, and, like, everyone in the house is aware that you're home, it's like, oh, Dad's home. Or it's like, oh, Dad's home, yay! Jesus would pass the garage door test. Do we? Right? how do we go about that? Like with the family time, but also when you get to hang out with them, are you just like kind of like on your phone, or are you actually like engaged with them? Yeah. Let's talk about hobbies. First of all, in his time on earth, Jesus got accused of being a party animal. So Christians should have a good time. Woo! Yay. Awesome. Right. We have the most to celebrate, so we should probably be the happiest people. Right. But also, like, what do you do with your hobbies? First of all, please have one. God gave you breath, lungs, eyeballs, and like hands and the ability to like move around. Have a hobby. Do something you enjoy. Like, just do something fun. There's plenty of time to be productive. We're Americans. We're very good at finding that. Don't be lazy, but also, like, you have time. Have a hobby. Go for a run. Play some board games. Play some video games. Like, do something. What do you enjoy? Do you like going, like, taste testing cakes at a bakery that you're not going to buy? Like, do something fun. But what about like work? Okay, that's another good example. Brought it up a couple of times. Now it's a good example. I was having a conversation with somebody this week, and we were just like sitting at Red Coach because it's where we hang out, because we enjoy life. Donuts are enjoyable. Okay, right. So we're sitting at Red Coach, and like the conversation stopped briefly, and he looked at me. He's like, "I had this thought. Yeah, what's up? If a Christian is qualified for the job that they have, and all that that means, like they can get there, they have the skill set, you know, things are appropriate, like they got hired into the correct role, all of that. If they're qualified for the job they have, and they're a Christian, there's really not a good reason for them to be bad at it now, is there? No, there's not. As a matter of fact, like, so again, if we're qualified for the jobs that we have, that's a big if, and like, and we can get there, we've got the transportation, all that kind of stuff. Like, if we can reliably go to work, we should at least be adequate at what we're supposed to do, right? Jesus had a job. He was a carpenter or a stonemason, depending on what that meant in the ancient world. We're still not 100% sure. But he did, like, manual labor with his hands and was apparently good at it. So we should at least be passable at the jobs that we have. But beyond that, this is a lot of like individual-centered, so let's broaden this out a bit. Let's talk about us as an entire unit here as Overflow. Okay, I don't know if y'all realize what kind of influence we have in this area. So there's about 300 or so people that call Overflow home. If you made a map of like St. Joe and Benton Harbor, there's an Overflow person on every 3 or 4 square blocks. Imagine if we all took Jesus home with us. Can you imagine what neighborhoods would be like? First of all, we wouldn't have to have like elderly shut-ins as a problem because someone would be there to go visit them. Like different like issues of like poverty and social lack of resources would start to be alleviated because the people on the block would begin to share with one another. We would actually have people that feel encouraged and not just like down in the dumps because of life, because somebody encouraging that had some hope was actually on the block with them. On top of that, like think about like just the different workplaces that we all go to as Overflow people. We got people that work just about every major business around here, but on top of that, we got executives that go to church here. We've got people in Whirlpool that go to church here. We've got people at the hospital that go to church here. We got people in both city governments that go to church here. Can you imagine the effect if in each of those places we all made one more Jesus-honoring decision per week? Talk about a transformed area. That's some good news that could really start popping into people's lives, because we can actually make environments where it's like, hey, you want to go to work here because the people are actually going to care about you. Hey, you actually want to work here because there's people that are doing good things with the money that they have. Like, hey, you actually want to like be a part of this community because the fastest way to develop a community is through work. And on top of that, so if we take Jesus to work with us, we take Jesus home with us, we take Jesus out to coffee with us, like we can see amazing, amazing things happen. All of that wrapped into is us just being like, okay, if Jesus had his Emmanuel moment in me, how would that go, right? It's a really basic thing. I understand that, but think about it. You're the Jesus that people are going to see. You're that person people are going to see. Like, there was that long, long time of history where, like, the people of God in the Old Testament were like, man, we wish Emmanuel would happen. We wish that would actually, like, happen and see. And then eventually Jesus came. You have people in your life who are like, man, I wish something would get better. You have people in your life that are like, man, life's okay, but, you know, there's probably something more that we could be going on and working with here. You have people in your world, in your network, in your area that you live near, that you work near, that actually could use some good news. You are the good news. Take it with you. So let's pray along that line, and let's sing along that Emmanuel line. If you want to stand with us, that'd be great. God, thank you for today. Thank you so much for who you are, that you came, that you're here with us, that you are, in every sense of the word, Emmanuel. God, that you are with us, you are for us, you empower us, you give us hope in a future, you give our area a place that it can go. You give hope to things that otherwise would not have hope. You give peace to places that otherwise would not have peace. You develop things toward looking more like the kingdom of God on earth. And so, God, for all of that and for all the opportunities we have, we thank you. We pray these things in the name of Jesus. Amen.